Quantum reading. Preface. Taking revelatory turns. I open with a couple of epigraphs, one from each of the two essays, the major essays in the book. This first one is from Quantum Reading versus the Rabbit Hole. All of a sudden, in late October, I went from having no books on my docket to five, each of which looked really interesting to me. I figured I'd read a bit of each and decide which to focus on first, then stage the others going forward. They were all so captivating to me, though, each in its own way. I just couldn't pick one. So I ended up reading them all simultaneously, 10 or 15 pages of one, maybe a chapter of the next, and so forth, night after night, for a couple of weeks. Very shortly, a wonderful thing began to happen. I'd be in the midst of one and would think I was somehow still in the midst of one of the others, or occasionally all of the others. It was as if I was not reading five separate books about widely divergent subjects set in vastly different contexts, but one book with five different facets. I began to wonder how that could possibly be. Second epigraph is from The Medium is the Hyperobject. In the meantime, that is, since I self-published this fall in 2016, I've written a passel of other books of personal essays and poems, making those similarly available instantly and for free on my website, or at cost, via online booksellers. In each case, especially with the prose books, I made an effort, which I highlight, to do something with the medium that would have been impossible if it were published via conventional channels. Some of them have to do with form. Some of them have to do with temporality, that is, the way material is sequenced and blended. Some of them have to do with genre hybridity. Some of them have to do with intertextuality. Some of them have to do simply with weirdness, the kind marketplace metrics are far less tolerant of than I am. I have had a blast throughout. As my first epigraph suggests, what follows here is less a commentary on the many worthy and provocative books my essays focus on than an argument on behalf of an alternative way of approaching them, what I call systems level or quantum reading, which strives to navigate between and among multiple diverse books assembled adventitiously, seeking their commonality rather than delving deeper into each separately. A process that always ends, for me, with a surprising revelatory turn, one I could never have anticipated when I started. For example, in Quantum Reading versus The Rabbit Hole, my holiday season extravaganza, the five books I ended up reading simultaneously could not have been more different. One highlighted a 20th century indigenous settlers' land rights conflict in New Mexico. One, the shift from hunting-gathering to agriculture many millennia ago. One, a 4th-century institutional crisis in the formation of the Catholic Church. One, a 19th-century argument between a Russian anarchist and the Marxist orthodoxy he had disavowed. And one, an 8th-century Chinese poet struggling to find a balance between worldly fame and spiritual renown. The thread that ended up holding them together was the concept of a primal matrix that I borrowed from one of the books and applied to all of them. The revelatory turn I took was toward an event happening right then, one quite disturbing to me given my professional history. The calamitous spectacle of those three university presidents flailing away at the congressional hearing focused on anti-Semitism on college campuses, which laid bare the critical condition the idea of the American university is in right now. Cultures at war with one another in the most helter-skelter ways, a critique I've had simmering in the back of my head for years. In The Medium is the Hyperobject, two intellectual titans, one on each side of the interim that spanned my professional career, ended up threaded together, not on the basis of any obvious set of common interests, but via a sort of Einsteinian wormhole that opened between them, making weirdly palpable what we now call, most generally, the postmodernist epic. The former book facing toward it, just before it arrived, the latter gazing back at it just after it passed, ancestor and descendant, suddenly seeing one another, at least in the alternate universe of my imagination, eye to eye, for the first and last time. The revelatory turn I took was toward the medium to which they both instinctively defaulted, one that seemed ill-suited to their messages. The book, quotation marks meant to emphasize its role not as a material artifact, but as a cultural icon. That generic tabernacle within which the ideology of Western patriarchy, power, and privilege has been ensconced serially for more than a millennium, at least since the codification of the Orthodox Christian Bible in the 4th and 5th century CE, including during the postmodernist era, which was addicted to it, especially in the academy, the ultimate in self-congratulatory, self-contradictory duplicity. One that impacted my own professional progress in the deleterious ways I document in the testimony manifesto that concludes the essay. As my second epigraph suggests, what follows here is also less a book in its own right than an argument on behalf of an alternative way of making and sharing what I call, in The Medium is the Hyperobject, the kind of no-book, at least in the eyes of the academy, that arises from the process of self-publication I committed myself to in the chaotic aftermath of my wife's sudden passing in 2015, and have remained devoted to ever since, one that accords me unprecedented freedom over the entire creative cycle. As I explain there, one of the most salutary effects of my newfound freedom and control, I soon realized, was that I could revise my book anytime I wanted, any way I wanted, as often as I wanted, which I did over and over, including adding the two long epilogues that conceptualize, via a character in a dream I had, what being free, which was his name, is and should be, not just in relation to one's work, but in one's life. That lame, hard binary distinction academics often make as an ineffectual gesture toward self-care. That my no-book didn't exist in my professional community was a detraction, I suppose, but one very well compensated for in other ways. For example, I own the copyright, no small thing, can alter or use the material at my discretion, all instantly and for free. I can even unpublish it with the click of a mouse. Name a publisher that will let you do that to one of their books. This sort of chronic interactivity is impossible with a book a publisher owns, which is DOA before the ink is dry, its publication more like a funeral than a birth or marriage, to borrow and hack into a set of metaphors Walt Whitman uses in his preface to Leaves of Grass. The closest thing in the 19th or 20th century to what I was doing right then. In other words, the book I made was alive, growing, changing, along with me, a relationship I reveled in. This fall went on to win a notable indie award in a book competition I submitted it for, and it has garnered other plaudits. I could not be happier to have left the building in this way. Not just once, for that book, but once and for all. This seemingly haphazard choice of my preferred medium for sharing that very intimate book, which made it ineligible for publication via the commercial press and an object of contempt among my professional peers, is now a cause I am deeply committed to and have been promoting for almost a decade. One that I hope and sometimes believe will revolutionize intellectual enterprise for both writers and readers in the latter half of the 21st century. Redefining reading as a way of rewriting what one is reading, and writing as a way of rereading what one is writing, all of a piece. It has taken me almost a decade to come to fully understand all of this via these two essays, a revelatory turn for which I am deeply grateful. I decided to add the third essay, a much shorter piece, almost as an afterthought, because in one of the books my second essay considers, Timothy Morton proffers a theory of time that is stunningly similar to the one I first envisioned about 30 years ago in an essay that was ultimately published in Enculturation in 2012, and then further materialized 7 years ago on a walk in Boyce Park in Pittsburgh. Via an assortment of similarly tidal metaphors, Morton and I invert the stereotypical arrow of time that Western culture takes for granted, not only in its conception of history, but in its fundamental physics, by means of which something quite magical happens. The future washes back and forth over us toward the past, not vice versa, palliating the laceration of time on the here and now. I was so happy to get endorsement for this revelatory turn from such a sharp mind as his. These essays have a more scholarly aspect than those I've been self-publishing in my books for 8 years now. I'm not sure why. As I explain over and over in my work, my fingers have minds of their own when I sit down to type. They don't record what I think. They reveal it. I simply allow them to follow their instincts. For some reason, right now, they seem to want to re-engage with the scholarly marketplace I eschewed with such a flourish after my wife passed. One of these essays has already been accepted for publication in an academic journal, and the other is out there looking for a good home. I take no great pride in that and make no apologies for it. I am neither a prodigal son nor a quisling. This is just another turn that opened up on the path I'm on, as revelatory as the others. And I took it, and I've enjoyed where it took me. The one thing I won't do is try to find a real publisher for this book. It will be, like all the others, free, here, right now, on my website, or cheap, there, in a few days, via online booksellers. You're welcome.